Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you live and direct from sunny, blazing hot Los Angeles, California. Hope you're having a great day, man. So, today's kind of a weird day, right? We had no playoff basketball yesterday. We do tonight. We got college baseball underway. We have, what is that called? Euro Cup? Is that what it is? Euro Cup? Euro Cup taking place. We got Major League Baseball taking place. And then, of course, we have the NBA playoffs. Game 2, Western Conference Finals tonight, which is weird because the Eastern Conference Finals have not yet even begun. That said, here we go. Away we go. And we have ourselves a mystery. What was your favorite cartoon as a kid? Favorite cartoon? I'll give you a couple of mine. I liked the Roadrunner, but I really liked the Roadrunner with Wile E. Coyote, Super Genius. You guys remember that? It's not just when he was Wile E. Coyote, he was Wile E. Coyote, Super Genius. Remember that version of Wile E. Of the Roadrunner? It's amazing. And when I say I liked cartoons as a kid, I'm underselling it. I really am. Because my generation, yes, we had video games, but I didn't really have the Intellivision, ColecoVision. Like my first real video game system, I think we might have had one of the, I think we had Atari before that with Pong and with, what was the tank game? I can't remember. Maybe it was called Tank. Anyway, it didn't dominate my life until it became the Nintendo Super System, right? That's when you had The Legend of Zelda and Super Mario Brothers and Double Dribble and Blades of Steel. So because I had a good window of 12 years or so of childhood before those things hit my brain, the video games hit my brain, I'd come home or go to a friend's house, and literally every day after school, I would watch Heathcliff. I would watch Gummy Bears. Was Gummy Bears, I think, was Saturday morning. Right? I wasn't a Smurfs guy. I wonder if it's because I love Scooby-Doo. Right? Because Scooby-Doo was a mystery. And if it wasn't for those meddling kids, people would have gotten away from it. Gotten away with it. Right? Well, we're going to be those meddling kids today. We have a mystery. We have a conundrum. We have a question. Want to know what it is? Who was Tom Brady talking about when he talked trash about a team that he felt like backed away from the table? When he was looking in free agency at a new team. This is what he said. This is what Tom Brady said on the show.
One of the teams, and they weren't interested at the very end. I was thinking, you're sticking with that motherfucker.
Oh, you're sticking with that mother. By the way, like post Super Bowl Tom Brady has far and away been the most enjoyable Tom Brady of our lives. Previously, Tom Brady, remember, he's just too damn good looking, too rich, too rigid, too stiff, too New England for the rest of the world to truly buy into. But then he gets tanked at the victory parade. Then he goes on the shop and starts talking trash. Then he changes kind of his tune of trash talk, getting ready for this big golf showdown. And you're like, you know what? I kind of dig this guy. Who is he talking about? Okay, the teams that we know Tom Brady was at least interested in, or we were told, was Miami, Tampa, Chicago, the Chargers, and the Niners. And to be honest with you, it's, by my estimation, a pretty easy mystery to solve. Right? It's really pretty easy mystery to solve. We can eliminate Tampa because he went there. We can eliminate Miami. Hey, eliminate Miami because Miami did not pull away. He decided against Miami. And I believe we can pull away from the Chargers because though they had Tyrod Taylor, they had, you know, after Tom Brady changed his tune and decided to not go, they went and drafted Justin Herbert, which was kind of part of their plan. But we didn't know until Tom Brady made his decision. It leaves us really with San Francisco and the Bears. And while the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky feel like they're the obvious answer, I think it's got to be Jimmy Garoppolo. My logic behind it is the Bears would have moved mountains to get Tom Brady. Would he have fit their offense? Probably not. Did they have the best personnel? No, they did not. Could they have protected him as he's a bit of a statue back there? Sure. There wasn't really a meeting of the minds with Matt Nagy and his offensive style, though he has been well-respected, despite the fact that they haven't been seen as a stunning success in Chicago. Remember that the thing we've learned about all of these quarterbacks, right, from Aaron Rodgers to Russell Wilson to Tom Brady, all of these guys, is they may appear to be nice guys and genuine guys and thoughtful guys, and great leaders and bright guys. But at the end of the day, you can't be this successful in sports unless you're an absolute killer as a competitor. And a killer as a competitor, it believes beyond any reasonable doubt that they are, in fact, the best at what they do. Otherwise, you can't be the best at what you do. And that competitive instinct, to me, says Tom Brady, it wasn't just he wanted to go to his hometown Niners, the team he dreamed of playing with, but he also wanted to see Jimmy Garoppolo be sent packing. Why? Because Jimmy Garoppolo was the guy that he sent packing originally. He wanted to be that guy that's constantly sending Jimmy Garoppolo to another team. That's why he was so snide. And oh yeah, by the way, he's seen Jimmy Garoppolo up close. He knows exactly what Garoppolo has, and he doesn't respect it. This is more educated guess than anything. Chicago is a reasonable guess, but the difference is I don't believe Chicago ever pulled out and ever was not interested. And even though Mitchell Trubisky is not nearly as good nor as well respected as Garoppolo, I think it was Garoppolo and the Niners, because even the Niners, by their own admission, said they kicked the tires, they thought about it, and they decided to stick with Jimmy G. The Niners have told you the answer. We know that he doesn't dig Garoppolo. It's reasonable to believe that he would want to inflict pain on Garoppolo and send him packing yet again. And we know that the Niners pulled out of the Tom Brady Derby by their own accord. Tom Brady might have gotten away with it if it wasn't for this meddling kid. That's the way I look at it. Ramos, you agree? You disagree? Discuss.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I do think that there's this little bit of an itch behind Tom Brady for the whole Jimmy G thing that went down in New England. And, of course, yeah, that all of your points come to that one conclusion for me as well, yes.
Gavin, do you think it's Chicago instead?
I lean a little more towards Chicago, because the Niners were just in the Super Bowl, and I think it's a little hard to take a shot like that, even though we all know that it was the team mostly and Kyle Shanahan that got them there, not just Jimmy G. And then the other thing, there is the Don Yee thing, where they share the same agent. Would he take a shot like that?
Hmm.
But he's Tom Brady, so he's unpredictable. So... he definitely seems like he is in his, he's just, you know, no one can say anything bad about him. He's out of New England. He doesn't have the restraints on him anymore. He can say whatever he wants. So nothing would surprise me.
What about you, Dan Beyer? What do you think, which team do you think it is?
I, I, I thought Bears. I still thought Raiders, maybe. But Niners is an option. I still don't know. I'm still confused. And I even went back to try to look, okay, what was the timeline with Chicago for when Brady signed with Tampa, when the Bears acquired Nick Foles as part of that deal? Because if Brady was saying that, was the Foles deal done beforehand, which would eliminate the Bears? So I'm still kind of up in the air. But I think that the Raiders still could have been a possibility as well. But
be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So there's lots of talk about what the Philadelphia 76ers are going to do. Here's Daryl Morey, who of course now works for the 76ers, on his thoughts on their future.
Tell us that Ben Simmons will be a 76er next season.
We have a very strong group we believe in. There's none of us can predict the future of what's going to happen in any place. We love what Ben brings. We love what Joel brings. We love what Tobias brings. In terms of what's next, we're going to do what's best for the 76ers to give us the best chance to win the championship with every single player on the roster.
Will you look at the value of Ben Simmons as well as any other player on this basketball team to improve the 76ers?
So you just defined the job of a general manager, which is to assess everything, assess every player on the roster, figure out what is best to do with them to help us win the championship. So yes, I'm going to operate as the general manager of the 76ers.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I almost wanted Bryce Harper to, like, you know the Mission Impossible thing where you, and it's also a little bit of the Scooby-Doo thing where you take off the mask, right, as somebody else, and he goes like, "That's a clown question, bro. Like, did you really ask me if I'm going to evaluate the value of every player on the roster?" Yes. And, you know, good for Daryl Morey where he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to do my job. Exactly what I'm going to do. Exactly what I'm going to do." Look, I definitely think you can try and fix Ben Simmons, but I think it's a 2 or 3-fold effort. What I have been told and what I have read and now what I have heard are all one in the same, in that there's a work ethic issue there. There's a work ethic issue. And it's interesting because I will be completely candid. Like, there was a work ethic issue with me at times. If you go back and look, you'd be like, "Man, that guy couldn't shoot at all." But if you were a 5'11 and 3/4 white Jewish point guard from Orange County, and just about every school in the country recruited you not once but twice, you had to, on some level, be able to make them think that you could shoot the basketball before they offered you a scholarship, right? Like, that's a reasonable, like, I was really good at the other stuff, but I had to be able to reach. And when I was in college, there were times in which it was bad. Like, I, you know, like, guys were not guarding me and I would not look at the basket. Like, there's a lot of how I played to how Ben Simmons was playing, not just the free throw line, but in court play in general. And so I can tell you, though, that I would work on it in the off season pretty hard, not as hard as I should have. Like, I had a good work ethic and I worked on my body and my game, but in hindsight, like, I could have worked harder. And then when the season would start, I would put so much into practice and I would still be working on my body. I don't think that I worked enough because sometimes guys have to work extra. You know, sometimes you have to work extra, especially when you're behind. So I think there was a work ethic issue at times with me, not like Ben Simmons, but Ben Simmons is a guy who has always wanted to work out with a family member instead of having a guy who's going to legitimately kick his butt and make him get better. Make him. Because he's gotten worse. You're either getting worse or you're getting better. One or two things. So I think, and this is my honest perspective, okay, I truly believe that when you look at Ben Simmons, there's the first, the work ethic issue, and he has to commit himself to, hey, this is rock bottom. Right? Just like a drug addict, right? That guys won't come off of drugs until they've actually hit rock bottom. Like, yo, dude, you turned down layups in the playoffs. You shot below 35% from the free throw line in the playoffs. If this isn't rock bottom, I don't know what is. So he has to completely commit himself to fixing it. There's no more denial of, well, you know, why take a questionable shot when I have a teammate who can shoot it better? Because we can't play 4-on-5. Can't do it anymore. Second thing is, got to work with a sports psychologist. But in part of that psychology, there has to be complete buy-in from teammates and the organization. He's got to be willing to put himself in game situations, even if it's embarrassing ones, like Summer League. Go play Summer League and take every shot. Go play Summer League and take every shot. Take jump shots. Be willing to miss them. Be willing to look bad. Because you have to work through that fear of failure. If you don't, you know, you're going to be that recluse. And maybe you don't do it right away. Right? But this is, you know, it's like agoraphobia, right? Like agoraphobia is where you fear like going out into public. So you just, people just, you know, hole up in their homes and they never leave. Well, yeah, you're never going to leave your house if you never leave your house. At some point, you got to leave your house, right? So I then, you know, how you coach him has to be different. If he turns down a shot in the regular season, if he turns down a shot in the preseason, if he turns down a shot, you take him out. When we need somebody to shoot free throws, he'll shoot free throws. Because you may lose a couple games in the regular season. So what? You want to win them in the postseason? You got to have him be a threat.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. How big are the Euros? I think I remember them being pretty big, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It's just, I think they're, it's a little, just because of pandemic, it's a little, you know, not as hyped as it was, but because you have World Cup every 4 years and you have Euros every 4 years, but World Cup, Euros, that's how it would work. So, yeah, It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. You know what else is a big deal? Is the U.S. Open. And I don't know if Matthew Wolf knows this, okay, but he was the number one pick. Wasn't he the number one pick? Is that accurate?
Yeah, he was first overall
pick in our little draft here. Now it should be pointed out that John Ramos, who drafted him, also drafted John Rahm, who actually won the damn tournament. But still, to be the number one overall pick, to finish 15th, like, that's pretty good stuff. Matthew Wolf joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Matthew, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, thank you for having me.
What was that back nine like on Sunday? Because to those of us sitting at home with a cold one enjoying Father's Day, it looked rough. What was Torrey South like on Sunday on that back nine?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, U.S. Open's the hardest test in golf, and obviously coming down the stretch, they're trying to make it as hard as possible. So, yeah, just really hard conditions, you know. Everything firmed out, so, you know, it was so hard. It was so much harder to hit the fairways, and then once you did, I mean, it was still hard to get it close to all those pins because, you know, you were just coming in with such long clubs, and, you know, to kind of witness what John did too was pretty amazing. You know, I think he played a really solid round all day, but those two putts on those last two holes, as left to right swingers, I mean, you have to have amazing touch in order to just make those with no pressure, and with all the pressure that he had, I mean, it was pretty cool to see him step up at that big of a time.
Yeah, no, it's really amazing, especially considering, you know, what he went through when he popped positive for COVID. What's your approach been like during these times in which you knew you're going to be tested, and there's so much question as to how you get through these protocols? What has your approach been like?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing much I can do. The PGA Tour has set up amazing guidelines, and USGA was the same way. They set up great guidelines for all of us to, you know, feel like we could have a good time and be free and not worry about COVID, as well as following all the rules that they have in place of, you know, just, you know, isolating ourselves or, you know, staying away from everyone else. And it was, you know, it's been a while since it's really felt normal. But, you know, like I said, they've been doing an unbelievable job of letting us play and giving us that freedom. And, you know, as well as all the fans out there, you know, I felt like this was the first week back that I was, you know, those roars were a lot louder than I remember them last time there were fans out here.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That is that's the voice of Matthew Wolf, of course, PGA golfer. And the Travelers Championship is one of the events that I've been to, right, up in Connecticut. And, you know, the stadium hole, it's – look, I'm not going to say it's Phoenix, but they're – Connecticut folks, the Nutmeg State, they kind of want to be Phoenix of the Northeast. Is it fair to at least – mention it in the Phoenix variety in terms of the relative rowdiness of the past?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see the past champions of the Travelers, you know, it's a great list of people. And, you know, I feel like there's been some very exciting finishes, and that has to do with, you know, the players hitting really good shots, but as well as just the course that, you know, it sets up so amazing for it. The par five, I think it's the 13th hole, is a great par five that you can make a birdie or eagle on and, you know, maybe jump a couple spots up closer to the lead. And then obviously 15 through 17 is just an unbelievable stretch where you can, you know, go two under and gain a bunch of shots or, you know, make a mistake and hit it in the water. So I just think that course sets up for such an exciting finish. And on top of that, you know, the fans here are, you know, they really love us, you know, coming here and playing the tournament, and they're so supportive, and they just, you know, they have such a good time, which makes us have such a good time. So it's a great atmosphere.
No question. Hunter Mahan's a buddy of mine. Obviously, he's also an OSU guy, and I mean, he's kind of deity status up there. Like does he blow you off when you get to Connecticut because he thinks he's so big time once he gets up there?
No, actually, it's funny you say that. I saw Hunter this morning, and I was going up to my room in the elevator, and he just got out. He was heading to the course, and you know, his hair was still had all the flow in the world, and you know, he looked good. But yeah, he said hi, and we just kind of passed and said, hope you have a good week. He's definitely not one that I've talked to a lot out here, but he's definitely said hi and, you know, reached out and said if I ever need anything, he's here. So it's nice to have OSU connection as well.
Obviously, look, you played the juniors, you played in plenty of big tournaments. This is the place where you made your debut as a pro. What, and that was just 2 years ago. What's that experience like of the first time you're technically a professional, right? You played in big events, played in PGA events, but now all of a sudden you're a pro. What is that actual experience like of teeing it up officially as one?
Yeah, it was, you know, a great experience. I think I was probably the most nervous I've been up to date, you know, when I was making my pro debut here, because, you know, coming out of college, I played really well and, you know, everything was, you know, a lot of high expectations, and coming out here and got a sponsor's exemption. So I was, you know, maybe putting a little bit of pressure on myself to play well. And, you know, it was definitely probably one of the highest pressure situations, even just teeing off on the first tee. But it was also one of the most fulfilling and just like, you know, memorable. You know, this is what I had dreamed of since I was a little kid. And, you know, I'd worked really hard and made my way up through every single rank, and, you know, to finally step up on that first tee as, you know, teeing it up in my first pro tournament was, it was definitely fulfilling.
Yeah. And then like a month later, you won your first tournament. What, you know, and you shoot a 65 and you probably have thinking like, this is cake, dude. Like I've been in this a month. I already win one. The night before, how did you process like sleeping, resting, you know, cause I've talked to a couple guys and they're like, it's just so different when it's Sunday and you're leading, or Sunday and you're close and it's a PGA, like, you know, and again, like you said, you've been doing it your whole life, but an event, what allowed you to play so well and shoot a 65, in Minnesota and win that 3M, which is your first ever win going back 2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. My first and my only, to date. That win at 3M was unbelievable. I think, you know, just that Saturday night before, I definitely made sure to be talking to, you know, my friends and my family and just kind of not take my mind off of golf, but just, you know, like ease the nerves and anxiety a little bit, because, you know, when you're in that position, especially that soon out of college, it's, you know, you're anxious. You're like, I just want to get out there. I want to, you know, go win or do the best I can and just see what happens, because you don't want to wait. And, you know, I made sure to stay in the present and just take my time. And I talked to my assistant coach. It's a conversation I'll never forget, Coach Dar. And, you know, even though it might be a little cliche, it was pretty simple. It was, you know, he was telling me I won six times in college in 1 year. And he goes, even though it's a different level, he goes, you've proven already just by being in the lead that you can play out here with these guys and you know how to win because you've done it so much in college. So go out there and winning, you know, on the PGA Tour level in college, it might be a little different, but winning is winning and you know how to close the deal. And that was the mindset that I had pretty much the entire day, and it worked out pretty well.
Okay, now then we go to Wingfoot going back into the fall. And obviously, you know, you're leading by two. How do you process that now, or how do you process that going back to Sunday at Torrey, where, you know, on one hand you finished second at the U.S. Open, on the other hand you didn't play nearly as well as you wanted to, and that third hole really kind of started a little bit of a spiral. Like, how does that affect you going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if any of that is negative, really. I mean, obviously I know I came in second and didn't win, or, but in, you know, the way I look at it is I'm so young and I've only played in a few majors, and I've already performed in all those and put myself in that situation to come down the stretch and play well. And, you know, even though, yeah, I might've not closed it out at, you know, Wingfoot or had a great round at the US Open at Torrey, you know, at the PGA Championship, I was four or five behind, and I shot 65 the last round to top five. So, I mean, there's sometimes, you know, it's your day and you're playing well, and sometimes it's not, and things just don't go your way. And, you know, it's just important to keep on putting yourself in those situations, because the more you do that, the more you're going to learn from it and be comfortable. And if I just keep on giving myself opportunities, I know one of these times, and it might not be soon, or it might be, you know, this year. I really don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm positive if I keep on putting myself in those situations, it's going to happen.
All right, you took 2 months off. Why and what did you do during those 2 months?
Yeah, I mean, the 2 months were definitely, I think it was just a little bit of a reset for me. I felt like I was playing pretty bad golf, and was really hard on myself, getting really down on myself, and just wasn't enjoying the game. And I was going in some pretty dark places, and you know, it's not even, you know, before I even showed up for the week, just being like, why am I here? You know, just really bad, you know, just a bad place. And, you know, the first couple, I'd probably say month and a half, I really didn't even golf. I just was talking to the people closest to me and inside my circle, and, you know, trying to just enjoy, you know, and be happy again, just enjoy life. And, you know, there's much more to life than just golf. And, I think that I was starting to play so much and not see the results that I wanted, that I started to connect my happiness with my results. And, you know, it's great when it's going good, but it, you know, when it's going bad, it can get you in some pretty dark places. And, I just made sure to care for myself and make sure I was happy and, you know, really put myself first for the first time in a little bit, and
I mean, like, look, how do you do that? Like, at your age, I mean, I think what happens is all of us now, you know, when you get into your 30s or 40s, 50s, you're sitting there going like, man, I wish I had had this wisdom I have now back then. You're in your 20s, you're early 20s. How did you know that, like, I gotta get a break from this? How did you, did somebody recommend it to you? Was it something inside? Was there a sign? Like, what is it that tells you, like, I gotta walk away from a cup for a bit?
I mean, I think it was everything, like, a little bit combined. I mean, there's definitely people that, you know, have recommended it and been like, hey, if you're not enjoying the game, like, don't, you know, don't play. Like, you don't have to play. Look, you know, luckily I got the luxury of, you know, not luckily, but, you know, I won, and now I have the luxury of having time to stay on tour and figure my, you know, my ups and downs out and get more acclimated out here. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have that time. And, but, you know, if you would have heard me, you know, people were telling me that, and I would have been like, I can't do this. I can't just stop playing. Like, you can't just do that. Like, and that was where my head was at. You know, it's in the middle of the season. I'm not supposed to stop. I mean, everyone's playing here. No one's going to take time off. That's for the off season. I'll figure stuff out in the off season. But I really got to a point where I was, you know, I was just struggling, like even, you know, finding any confidence or even like wanting to go out there and play and like compete. Like my edge and my, you know, my enjoyment, my happiness with involved like around the game of golf just totally went away. And I was like, you know, even though I'm loving, you know, the life that I live and, you know, I make a lot of money or, you know, I have all these opportunities to travel and stuff like that, I know my happiness is more important than all that because, I mean, and to be honest, you know, I think that's really all that matters is you're happy and you're enjoying yourself. And, you know, it was a hard decision for sure, but I had the people around me support me through it. And, you know, it's definitely a worthwhile little break and, feel like I'm in a much better spot now.
Okay. So, you know, you finish tied for 15th at the U.S. Open. In the most honest answer you can give me, did you feel the joy of playing golf? Did you enjoy it, or did any of those feelings creep back in as tough as that course was the last couple of days?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I was definitely frustrated out there. But there's a
difference, right, between being frustrated and, you know, depressed, right? There's a difference there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I was trying to get to. Yeah. Like there are times that I was frustrated, but the feeling of frustration wasn't the feeling that I was having back in, you know, the last 4 or 5 months when I was playing golf. You know, that feeling of, like you said, depressed, sad, just like not even wanting to be there. That was a feeling that I was having. And, I can absolutely say that there was no feeling that like that at all during the U.S. Open. And, you know, I felt like, to be honest, not only was there not a feeling like that, but I did play well. And most people, you know, might think, oh, well, obviously you're going to enjoy it if you're playing well. But even when I was having bad stretches of golf, even when I made a double, you know, that's the time where I'd usually get very mad and frustrated and kind of just like, you know, just a little down on myself, where as this week or the last week at the U.S. Open, I was very, you know, just like happy to be there and excited to compete and no matter how the week went. And, you know, it's probably not a coincidence that as soon as I started being happy and enjoying it, I started playing well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really, you know, I did not care about my score at all last week. And I still, it's great that I finished tied for 15th, but when, you know, I didn't even look at what I finished, honestly. The only reason I knew what I was at was because people were telling me. Like, I didn't even care what I finished. I was just so happy that I enjoyed myself and I, like, had fun out there, because that's literally the entire goal for last week, this week, next week. I mean, for the rest of my career, like, I'm just trying to have, you know, fun and enjoy it and be happy and, you know, be thankful for the life that I live.
Can I tell you the biggest mistake you made, though, this weekend?
What's that?
You didn't call me. I'll tell you why. Dan Beyer and I, we played the Farmers Insurance Open, the South Course. We won the Pro-Am there. What was that? Was that 2 years ago with CT Pan?
Yeah, we led CT Pan to victory, and then he won a few months later. So there was some.
I gave him a couple of tips.
Yeah,
I was telling him what he was doing with his hips. His hips were all screwed up. And we could have straightened you out. We could have really helped you get some course knowledge, you know. And we played, I think, 3 years in a row. We won it on the South Course. Two other people play in the North, and no, you know, we're Oklahoma State guys. We're Southern California guys. Not one call, not one text. Listen, I mean, all this other stuff is great, but you gave away an advantage that you had, and it was like a layup. It was like Ben Simmons this past weekend. He turned out an absolute layup. That's what you did.
Well, you know what? It's all about learning, isn't it? I'm still learning, so you know what? I'm glad that I can put my head down at night on the pillow and say that I learned something today.
Okay, good, good.
That's the text you or call you next time.
Okay, listen, I played the Pro-Am at River Highlands. I've never won it. I do have some course knowledge. I'll share it with you off air. And that way, when you win Sunday, you can go like, listen, there's lots of people I want to thank, but Doug Gottlieb straightened me out. He told me about the seventh hole, little trick to the seventh hole, and and it's what turned me around. And listen, we're so happy that you're feeling better about playing golf. We love watching you, and it's always brave to say these things and to go through what you've gone through in a very, very public forum. It's awesome. And hope all is well. And kick Hunter's ass, would you? Because, I mean, he just, the level of arrogance winning that tournament one time, we just can't take it.
I'll do my best to humble him. Don't worry. Right. But yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show and those kind words. And yeah, just thank you again for having me.
All right, cool. Matthew Wolf joining us. Check him out on CBS and the Golf Channel at River Highlands this weekend.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is the Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. All right, we'll talk some NBA draft lottery next hour. Went a little long with Matthew Wolf, but that was worth it. That was worth it, right? Like, have you ever been one of those spots where you just, and it's interesting what he talked about, like kind of losing the enjoyment of your sport. And I will tell you, if I'm being totally candid about the Ben Simmons thing, that's how it made me feel. When I finished playing and I first started working at ESPN, and I love basketball, but I was like, I didn't want anything to do with it. And I covered it, and it was like painful to not play it. I was still 26 years old. I still had plenty of, like, my best basketball still in me. And there were times in which I had kind of broken out of the malaise of how I was feeling previously. But when you just feel debilitated because your brain isn't functioning properly, doesn't believe you should be able to achieve what your body knows it can achieve. All right, we'll get on more of that next hour. Let's get to what the Fox said.
And now.
Every day we like to find something on Fox Sports Radio or Fox Sports 1 that we find interesting. This is from Undisputed on Fox Sports 1. Here's Skip Bayless.
I still do not trust Giannis. He has flamed out so many times just when you wanted to trust him in big playoff series, and I believe that moment has arrived again. There's something that I grudgingly came to love about the Hawks. I don't love Trae Young, but I love his spunk, his spark, his spirit. Yeah. I love those things about him, and they do too. And he's just so difficult to contain because of his quickness. He's hard to stay in front of.
Yes.
All right. There's something about Nate McMillan that I trust eminently more than I do Budenholzer in a big playoff series. Nate McMillan is right there with Ty Lue as an adjuster, as a motivator, as a calming influence for what's still a pretty young basketball team. But I am going with the Hawks just on that spirit of theirs because they went and got Nate McMillan. And you want to talk about a turnaround? You want to talk about a role?
Well, would have the third best record over the final stretch?
Yeah, I think, look, I love the idea of the Hawks. Okay, I love the idea of the Hawks, and I'm with you. There's lots of Giannis I don't trust. You know, I don't think he's a good enough shooter. I don't think he's going to make game-winning free throws. But let's not act like this is a flawless Hawks team, right? Let's not. They also don't have their starting power forward. Their best player is still very, very young. I think he can be exposed defensively, and you can't achieve something for a second time if you haven't achieved it for the first time. That makes sense. Like the Bucks did just beat the Nets. Granted, the Nets were depleted, but they beat them.
What does the Fox say?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.